Tonight on Arena, we look at Gay Byrne's contribution to the artistic life of this country. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Well, as you've been hearing, the death of Gay Byrne was announced earlier today. The airwaves have been full of friends and colleagues paying their respects to this colossus of broadcasting. As well as being an incisive interviewer with a nose for a good news story, he was also a great friend to the arts. So often on his daily radio show, he would give his opinion of the musical or play he had attended the night before at the Abbey Theatre or the Gate Theatre or the Gaiety Theatre. And he was a voracious reader and lover of music, a true friend of the arts and artists. And joining me now on this sad evening is Christy Moore. It is it's very hard to even quantify the type of loss to all many aspects of life that Gay Byrne is passing today, Christy.
Yeah, it feels as if a light has gone out, Sean, you know, with the passing of Gay. He meant so much to so many of us, to so many people in all walks of life, you know, young and old. He was a constant in our lives certainly in my life for almost 50 years.
I think your first appearance on the Late Late Show was back in 1972 with Planxty. Do you have memories of that night that spring to mind on a day like today, Christy?
Yeah, very distinctly. I remember sitting in the lobby of RTE and kind of all very giddy, going on television, nervous but giddy. And as Gay walked through, I said something and he looked over at me and said, "Don't worry, Sonny, everything will be all right," he said, Sonny, to me. And I just remember for years afterwards, I mean, he hit the nail on the head. I was too giddy and lacking respect. But we went and played on the Late Late Show that night, and he took to us and spoke about our music on his radio show the following weeks and played the Cliffs of Dunneen and the Raggle Taggle Gypsy, and he really helped to launch Planxty back in 72.
The kind of power that he had, the kind of cultural power that he had, in terms of if something was played on the Gay Byrne Hour on the famous radio programme, it was almost guaranteed that it would become a success immediately.
Well, definitely, when Gay played your music, the country heard it, you know, and it would become part of the conversation. And he had great humanity and great dignity and a very, very special man. I also remember the great respect he had for my mother. My mother came on the Late Late Show one night, and himself and herself kind of struck it off. And any time I'd meet him afterwards, he'd say, "How's Nancy getting on?" And he had the common touch.
Mm. And Moira Brennan is also on the line. And funny enough, Moira, it's your father that I think you will remember as much in connection with Gay Byrne as you will anything else.
Indeed, indeed. He used to come into Leo's. As you know, he had a house up in Dunloe there. Mm. And would spend the summers up in Donegal. So we kind of got to know him a bit. But he'd come into Leo's Tavern and my father would be up singing. And of course, my father would look around to see who the family would be there to get up on stage to show the family off to Gay Byrne, because he was an important guy, you know.
Yeah.
And so that was my first introduction to Gay and Kathleen coming into Leo's. But as Christy was saying, he was such a supporter of, you know, of Clannad and just the arts and music and everything, and being on his radio show several times and, you know, giving you the time of day and always making sure you were all right. And when Harry's game happened, I remember he was first there to kind of greet us and make sure we're on the Late Late Show. And he turned around and he said, "Oh, you know, you might think that these were an overnight success, but I know them for a very, very long time." And, you know, but he just made you feel very at ease, as Christy said. You know, he'd always time for you.
Yeah, because I think
you
were pointing out, Moira, because obviously, you know, going on the Late Late Show, particularly in the 70s and 80s, when we're talking about that period in time, it was such, and still is a powerful show, obviously, but it had such power. But he made a point of coming to see you beforehand.
Oh, he did. I mean, he always came to see us in loads of things. And only about 6 years ago, would you believe, I was doing a gig in Leo's, and himself and Kathleen came in and was sitting in the corner there, and I couldn't believe it, you know. But he was really a great supporter of just, you know, when he clogged into what you were doing, music and every music-wise, and just in the arts in general. He really did help an awful lot of musicians and people in the art world to be heard, because people did listen to what he had to say. And as Chrissy also said about his radio show, it was like everybody tuned into it. Everybody. Yeah. And the Late Late Show, it was a religious kind of, you know, it was a religion in the house to be sitting there watching the Late Late Show, because it was his show, and he just used to do an amazing job.
And I suppose the other side of that is, Christy, that he was very kind. You would hear him when he would make a comment on a show he had seen, or indeed if he was listening to a piece of music. If he enjoyed it, he would tell you that. But if he had been to something that he hadn't particularly enjoyed, or that wasn't to his taste, or if I presume the same thing with music, if he heard something that wasn't particularly to his taste, he wouldn't necessarily, you know, put that out there. Ah, that's a load of rubbish. But would he say things to you maybe off the ball or in the green room or subsequently? Would he let you know what he thought about things that maybe hadn't worked?
Well, more than that, one night I sang a song of my own on the Late Late Show, and I came to the end of it, and he said, "What in the name of God was that all about?"
This was on air, yeah?
You're live on the Late Late Show.
How did you respond to that?
Well, I didn't know what to say. I think I said, "Well, I sing another song."
Do you remember what song it was?
I do. It was called "Riding the High Stool."
And have you adjusted it since in a way that you're not asked that question?
Well, to tell you the truth, I kind of dropped it after that.
That was the level of power. But the times that both yourself, Christy, and you, Moya, the times that you're talking about there, you were both, maybe in the early days, in the early parts of the career. But even for you, Moya. Like when you were talking about those nights in the pub where your father would say, go down and put a show on for Gay Byrne, like you were a teenager. Yeah. You were a teenager at that time, 16 or 17. Had you an idea going downstairs? Did you know the power of the man? Did you know the celebrity of the man? Or was it just, oh, here's Dad again getting us to do something for some fella?
No. We knew the power of the man. I mean, it wasn't long before that we had a television, and it was like, you know, so we would have been watching the late. And of course, to have him coming into Leo's was like, I mean, it was the ultimate. Like, he was the king, you know what I mean, of television and the radio. And you were well aware. And we'd be kind of half embarrassed, half shy, getting up and, you know, doing whatever we could do. But like, you would get up and do something. And Kathleen, of course, being a harp player as well, I had a huge time for her and, you know, what she did, what she did for the Clarisha and everything. And she was always so, you know, she's so lovely. A person, and they were just a great couple.
I know one of your fondest memories, Christy, is the One Night Only series. That was an incredible, it was a couple of seasons of it, I think, and I certainly got the impression watching those where he would have somebody in, literally it was an audience with Gay Byrne for the night, or an audience with Christy Moore it would have been, for One Night Only, I think was how the programmes were actually billed. But you really got this sense that it was just him and you having a chat, and that we were kind of eavesdropping in on that. Had he a way of making you feel that it was just you and him in the room?
Well, that was the feeling on that particular show. It was just like sitting down in his front room, having a conversation with Gay Byrne, and you forgot about the cameras, you forgot about the audience, and just a really intimate conversation. But any time you'd speak to Gay, he had this facility of getting you to go into areas that you hadn't planned to go into, or he was, I don't know, people opened up to Gay Byrne.
Yeah. You know? And do you remember specifics of that, Christy, where you found yourself talking about something and you were halfway up that blind alley before you could reverse down out of it?
Yeah, there would have been a few times, all right, when he got me going, you know, and I can't think of anything specific at the moment, but I know a few times leaving the Late Late Show wondering, geez, I wonder should I have gone there, you know?
That sounds like the laughs of recognition in the background there, Moya.
Yeah, exactly.
I can see that neither of you are going to share any of those particular blind alleys with me. I can hear that very clearly from you.
You either remember them or we've forgotten about them.
The other thing that I think you were keen to talk about, Moya, was his involvement, Gay Byrne's involvement in the Mary of Dunloe Festival.
Yes, Yeah, I mean, he was a great man for Dunloe, and he did an amazing thing for you know, the fact that he chose that place as his holiday home and everything. But he got very involved in the Mary from Dunloe, and he was a faraday, as he was for the Rose of Tralee. But they were so thrilled to have him there, as you know, supporting that. And that's why it's still going, because it was, because he was very much part of it from the beginning. But he really supported Dunloe people, Donegal people. He always spoke about Donegal and loved it. And, you know, and his daughter, Crona, whom you know, she still drops in to see us. And I just saw her there at the last, you know, Mary from Dunloe. She loved it up there. And she's supporting. And she's on the committee of the Mary from Dunloe. So fair play to her, you know, they're a great family.
Céline Byrne, the soprano Céline Byrne, is also joining us on the phone now. What was I going to say? The meaning of life, I think, was the first moment at which you spoke directly to Gabo, Céline. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. No, we don't have Céline just of yet. We're just in the middle of getting that phone call. I beg your pardon about that. Just going back then, Christy, to, you know, not just his own involvement in music and arts, but it was the other kind of aspects of culture that he opened us up to. You know, people like Spike Milligan. Are there aspects of other aspects or other acts that you saw and heard in the late that really stood out for you?
Well, I always remember years and years ago, Peter Ustinov coming on. And then there was the Spike Milligan and the Billy Connolly, and they were all truly memorable. But one thing I'd like to share is that Gay, he was ill, and he came to one of my concerts in Vicar Street last year. He came with his family. And he was very, very ill, and it was a struggle for him. But he came, not only that, but he came backstage afterwards into the green room and gave a little bit of time to everybody, all the technical crew, all the people working backstage. He shook hands with them all and thanked them all. And to me, that was a great sign of the man, you know. His humanity shone through that night, you know. He was still sparkling, but he was weak. And he was, but he made the effort. He made the ultimate effort to be kind to everybody.
And that aspect, I think, is very important, Maya. He did attend things.
Yeah.
He was one of the great. He attended theatre. He attended concerts. And he would, invariably, from what I can hear, he would actually speak directly to the people afterwards, whether it's messages or coming backstage, as Christy had just described.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was amazing man to be doing like what he did. He always made you feel warm, you know, and he always made you feel important. And I remember the last Late Late Show that I was on was the one with the Chieftains and myself and Van Morrison and a load of us. And he was there before and he was there afterwards and making sure he was talking to everybody. And he just didn't bypass anybody. He was great for that. And that's a very honourable thing. It's a great thing to be able to do. And he certainly did that.
Joining us now also is the artist John Kynes. And perhaps, John, you got to turn the books a little bit, or turn the tables a little bit on Gay Byrne, in that you were commissioned to paint his portrait for the National Gallery in 2000. What kind of subject was he in that respect?
Well, I think he was a little bit uncomfortable with the situation because he wasn't in control and you know, he wasn't used to that situation where somebody else is in charge of his image, as it were. And I could see he wasn't quite calm about it. And I put on, I couldn't stop him talking. And I like to concentrate on work like that. I like to have quiet or not total silence, but I needed to concentrate. So I put on a talking book of Alan Bennett reading The Lady in the Van, which I knew he'd seen in the theatre, which he liked. And so I put that on just to get him out of his default of talking.
Yeah, because I would presume that his modus operandi in that situation would be, despite the fact that he was the subject of the portrait and supposedly the person who was supposed to be sitting at your beck and calling, that he would almost start to interview you. Was there a bit of that going on?
Well, I knew it's such a long time ago now, I can't remember the details of our conversation. But I think, I mean, he came out, I was living in Tullow in County Carlow at the time, and he came down. I think I probably gave him lunch and then we had a bit of a chat. But yes, he was used to being the main talker, or the, yeah. used to having conversation at least going on during any encounter like that.
And how nerve-wracking, I mean, I suppose at any point unveiling a portrait for somebody is a pretty nerve-wracking activity. How nerve-wracking an activity was it for you, the unveiling of that portrait to Gay?
Well, it was quite some time after the sittings that it was unveiled, and it was a big event, and it was in the National Gallery. And I think he'd probably had seen the portrait, you know, before that. But you know, later on, I found out he didn't really like it.
And he didn't. How did you find that out?
Through an interview he did with the Independent, and he didn't like either. He was particularly scathing about the one Derek Hill did of him for RTE, and I think he had a very uncomfortable sitting on Tory Island too, for that. But he. I think he sees himself as being a humorous person, which of course he was, and he had a lot of very humorous people on his programmes, but he also had terribly serious subjects that they dealt with, and also very serious people. The one he liked was something a fan had sent him, like an amateur artist had sent him a painting she'd done of him. And he was laughing his head off, and that's the one he liked.
It pleased him to see that particular one. Yeah. Also joining us on the line now is Hugh Linehan of the Irish Times. I suppose, Hugh, you know, Moya has been talking about it there, Christy and John, in fact, all talking about the kind of input that he made into their lives specifically. It's very difficult to measure his input into the cultural life of this country.
Figure, isn't he, in so many ways, Sean? And one of the things that I found myself thinking about this afternoon and listening to all these tributes, particularly listening to Christy and Moya there, was he was conscious of his power, and he used his power well, not just in the ways that people have talked about in terms of the social impacts of the programmes, but his real love for performance. You know, he was himself obviously a consummate performer, and you hear even Christie's little anecdote about just a little word to him before he goes out on the stage. He understood performance, and he loved performers. And the other thing that keeps coming up, I think, again and again, keeps popping out, is his love of comedy and his love of humour. And I think a lot of that goes back to, you know, his own background and his roots and his family's roots in Dublin, and that sort of a certain type of Dublin variety performance of the pre-television years, the immediate pre-television years. And he took all that and he brought it into this new medium. He created this new thing, which was entertainment in the form of a conversation. And that conversation could be entertaining, but it could also be deadly serious as well. And he just created it. And I think he did it in a way in Ireland that we don't see anywhere else. Of course, The Late Late Show was based on other kinds of TV shows, Johnny Carson and things like that. But he made it particularly, peculiarly Irish. And in doing that, he became a performer in his own right, which I think is what he always thought of himself as being. And of course, not just musicians, but, you know, everybody from Rosalind Linehan to Tommy Tiernan benefited from The Late Late Show stage, you know, over the years. And you could see how much he loved comedians. I think maybe there was something about, he was so prepared and he was so, in a way, controlled himself of his performance, so superbly controlled of it. He likes the anarchic wildness that came through in some of those comedians. I think that's one of the things that drew him to Sinead O'Connor, for example, as well. There was something in them that he really loved to bring to the screen and to bring to Irish audience.
But he actually wasn't he wasn't afraid to, when he had that anarchic wildness on there, if he felt it was going too far, he would actually stop it. Not stop it necessarily, but he could put somebody in their box if they were misbehaving, as he thought.
Oh, he was very much the boss, you know. He was very much, in a way, what he created was a new version of the MC, the master of ceremonies, you know, whether it be in the circus or on the music hall stage. He was lord and master of all he surveyed, and I think anybody, you know, who talks to him about his control of the production of The Late Late Show and of the radio show, indeed, you know, would say that. And he would, you know, he had that sort of schoolteacherly manner, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's enough now, stop that.
Yeah, well, a bit like Christy's story earlier on. What exactly was it he called you, young boy, or was it Christy?
Sonny.
Yeah, kind of, you knew who was in charge when you heard that.
Oh, yeah.
We do have Celine Byrne on the line now. And we were talking about some of the different shows, and I was talking to Christy, Celine, about One Night Only. Yeah. Which was that kind of very intimate audience that he manages to do. But you had that literally that one-on-one interview where it was just you and Gay and two chairs when you spoke to him on the meaning of life.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I mean, he's a wonderful man. He's a wonderful interviewer because he makes everybody feel at ease. And instantaneously, when you sat down beside him, he was just—he just made you feel so welcomed. And it's just such a loss. Mm. He's just—he was a wonderful man. And I worked with him also in the opening of Arthur's Way, which was the Guinness story, and they opened up a way around Kildare. And I opened that with him, and he was just always cracking jokes. And yeah, it's just a real sad loss for everybody, especially for Kathleen.
Yeah.
And he came to a lot of my concerts as well. And actually, he's such a—he was such an old-style kind of gentleman, because he would handwrite little notes for me and leave them at stage door. And the couple of operas that he came to see, he left bouquets of flowers or a Christmas at the galas that he came to with Kathleen.
Yeah, and in fact, Christine,
candles and. Such a lovely man.
Yeah, Christy was talking about that earlier on, and Maya was talking, you know, about the specifics of him. Christy was talking about a very recent gig where, despite the fact that he was quite ill, that he still came back and made sure to say hello to everybody.
Yeah.
And you had a situation, I think, recently enough too, wasn't it, where it was Kathleen that came to the gig, and she still passed on the message that he had sent to you.
Yeah. Last Christmas, she came to my Christmas gala, and she, again, another little present, and I had a little candle with potpourri and a note from him just saying he was sorry that he couldn't make it. And that, like, I felt so, oh my God, like, it was just wonderful, because obviously he was ill at the time.
Mm.
And he'd always write down, and every time he left a note, he'd always put down at the end, and if there's anything you need, always remember to write me a note and stick it in the letterbox, and we'll try and help you in any way we can. And now, I never did, but it was just so lovely to know that he was there and he would help you, because he was a great supporter of the arts.
Yeah, you knew that he would actually come back on that. And that support of the arts, Hugh, I mean, I know you'd have seen it through your mother, Rosalie Linehan, and Des Kyo, and your father, and the work that the three of them did together. I suppose Gabo's signing off on something like that was a huge aspect for them as much as for anybody in the country. You knew you had to go to that, your father,
Fergus? Well, it was fantastic. And I think, I don't speak for my mother, but I think there was a sense that he managed to smuggle things into the public sphere through his position, through his popularity in RTÉ, that otherwise might not always have got out there, you know. And when people talk about the social impact of the Late Late Show, you know, it was supposed to be just a, you know, quote, just a variety show, unquote.
Yeah.
And it was because of managing to use that as a vehicle that he did all those other things and, yes, supported them. And, you know, you and I know, Sean, we've been to a fair few first nights over the years. And, you know, God knows how many times we saw Gay there. He was
absolutely
indefatigable supporter of Irish theatre and the Irish stage and all the performers on them.
Yes, a great supporter of arts. And he always took time to take pictures with people, always, because he knew how much it meant to people to get in a picture with him or just to shake his hands. Like, he knew how much that meant to people, and he took the time. Not everybody does.
I suppose I would tell the one story of years ago. Pat McCabe had adapted Frank Pig Says Hello for the stage. Gay Byrne came to the opening night in the Gate Theatre. Invited Pat on to his show, The Gay Byrne Hour, the next morning, and the show was sold out for its run by midday that day. That was the
power. Yeah,
that was the
power.
Type of power.
Yeah.
And he never abused that power. It would seem that he used it very, very carefully. I'll finish with you, if I could, Christy Moore. Long and abiding or abiding memory for you of Gay Byrne. What will it be, Christy?
Oh, this is a weird one. It just comes into my mind now. Upstairs in the tent, down below in the dome, with Gay Byrne and the Pretty Polly Tights and beauty queens from Tashkent and Istanbul, Bangkok and Liverpool. I'll never forget that night. The Roses Tralee, Gay Byrne. Oh, what fun we had.
Christy Moore, thank you for that. And thanks also to Hugh Lenehan, Celine Byrne, Maya Doherty and John Kindness, all of whom were with us. Maya Brennan and John Kindness, all of whom were with us on this Monday evening to remember Gay Byrne, whose death was announced earlier today.